This is David Duke, broadcasting to the world on Web Radio. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, no matter where they may live upon the earth. And ladies and gentlemen, yesterday we had a fantastic interview with Dr. Tom Sunick, an individual who has a PhD, in fact, from the University of California, who is a fine author and a brilliant author who's written a lot about the sociobiology of the issues facing European mankind. Also, he knows a tremendous amount about communism, which we discussed yesterday. But today, we're going to continue on with our interview. I'm very happy to be here in Zagreb, Croatia, and I'm very happy to have this incredible intellect with me today and for him to share his very, very valuable time to discuss some of these issues with us. Tom? Dr. Sunick, great to have you with me again today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being on your show. Appreciate it, Dr. Duke.
And today we promised our audience that we'd go into some of your racial thinking, some of your thinking in terms of European mankind, some of the problems we face, some of the issues on immigration, other issues, Homo Americanus, and how Homo Americanus is affecting maybe Europa Americanus, Homo Europus.
Yes, exactly, which is today more or less the same thing, you know, because we're all Americanized, whether we like it or not.
You know, one thing I have to endure in Europe quite often is a tremendous anti-American sentiment. And I always tell people, I said, well, look, you know, we could do this. The same thing happened during the Second World War. They made us divide each other, the Germans, Americans against the Germans, and the same thing as this happened during the Soviet periods. I often hear the great Satan they call America. Well, the truth is there are more, and I told this to the Russians the other day when I was at a conference in Moscow, there are more white people in the United States of America today than there are of all races in the Russian Federation.
Absolutely, 170 million, if I'm correct.
So I say to them, please don't, you know, please understand we're controlled in the United States by the neocons and the anti-American factor, just as they're controlled in Europe to a great extent through that factor, mm-hmm. and just as Russia is not exactly free either, because the government also does some policies which are hurting the Russian people. So let's get into this, and I'd like to get some of your, just give me some general commentary, if you would, on the state of European mankind, what problems you think we face, and some of the aspects of a cure for this malaise. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for your nice question. If you don't mind, I'll just like to backtrack a little bit and just start with my, it's almost my cliche. You know, probably the advantage of communism was its transparency. It was such a vulgar system. It was such a brutal system. It was such a pathological system. You know, I can't find the worst qualifiers. I used quite a few of them yesterday. But I need to specify, and I'm sure you will agree with me, totalitarianism is the worst when it's least perceptible. And this is the problem nowadays with the so-called Free West, including the United States of America. There is a different form of repression. There is a different form of the subtle type of a conditioning, which many, many people are not aware of. You know, at least we as quote-unquote former anti-communist dissidents, including my great role model Solzhenitsyn, at least we knew who our enemy was. We could decipher the enemy. We knew that the enemy was a bastard. Excuse my word, but I need to call the bastard a communist bastard. But nowadays, how can you truly figure out who the real bastard is? How can you actually decipher neocons in the United States of America? Or for that matter, bad folks who actually follow up in their footsteps. There are quite a few of them, and that's probably the negative advantage of liberalism. I call it liberalism, which is a very fluid word. It actually provides, it actually in conditions people, it actually carries out its repression in a much more sophisticated and a subtle fashion. That's something we need to harp on quite a bit, because masses are not aware of that. And as far as Europe is concerned, let me tell you one thing. I sort of hate to make a clear distinction nowadays between the United States of America and the European Union, because there is none. There is none. Both the United States of America and Europe are being literally, not metaphorically, inundated by foreign immigrants. Just for the record, there's over 20 million non-European immigrants now in the European Union. The population of the European Union with 27 European member countries is about 450 million, if I'm correct. So consider the large amount of non-Europeans here, and I frequently wonder, how do those people identify with our culture here, despite the fact that they may pick up some foreign language of the country where they live? What do they think? What is their destiny? How do they feel about themselves, and how do they feel towards the host countries, let alone the United States of America, which, in my view, I'm very much pessimistic about.
Yeah, it's a tragedy, of course. It's a great, enormous human tragedy, the loss of our European traditions, our heritage, and even, as you always talk about, our very genes. Our very existence as a people, which certainly we should have the right to live.
There is a good, just pardon my interrupting you, there are quite a few books by prominent sociobiologists. By the way, I'm going to be meeting one of these days in Zagreb itself, Dr. Richard Lynn. You may be familiar with him.
Very well.
Who actually talks about this. And I'm sometimes really, you know, talking about freedom of speech. You see, Dr. Duke, how many topics we have to cover here. Because once we start with communism, we inevitably have to end up, you know, with the IQ. Because the fact of the matter is that not just America is in the process of dumbing down in terms of its educational system. The same thing is happening in Europe. And with all due modesty and with all due intellectual integrity, I have to tell you, you should not be ashamed of being a good American, because we have lots of people, even here in Austria, in Germany, who have no idea, especially the younger generation, of their history, who have no idea of what life, what the human drama is all about, other than watching all those cheap soap operas or Melrose Place or what have you on TV. And this is something, I call it the soft gulag, if you can follow my metaphor. It's a soft gulag. There's no need to actually send people to ship them or to cart them off to the gulag or to Kolyma or to Siberia. You can just give
them
dope. Brainwashing. Give them speed, give them meth, give them amphetamine, give them dope. And
give
them
American television 8 hours a day.
Here we go. That's the best way. And let me put it, if I may, I frequently use this pun. If Stalin, who comes from Georgia, or not Georgia, from Atlanta, don't get me wrong, from Gruzia and the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, had he been a little bit smarter, Dr. Duke, had he been a little bit more intelligent, instead of just opening up the gulag fields, he could have just planted marijuana in Georgia, because in Georgia, in his Gruzia, there's lots of marijuana. And he could just ship this all over Eastern Europe. And no martyrs, no killing fields, and he could have created himself a name. And this is exactly what's happening with drugs and with this, with those cheap thrills, not just in America, but all over Europe. That's what I'm afraid of, specifically as far as Croatia is concerned. We did get rid of communism, but now we have the drug routes here crossing Zagreb. We have lots of prostitution. We have lots of mafioso from Albania and coming from all over, from Turkey, selling drugs. And believe it or not, I consider this just as much as a crime as communism.
Well, there could be a dumbing down, obviously, with drugs. There could be a dumbing down in terms of the lowering of our educational standards and mass low common denominator television.
Yes.
But also, wouldn't you say one of the critical aspects of dumbing down is simply the fact that the most intelligent and the most capable and productive of our people are having the fewest children?
That's the problem, exactly. And I'm pleased that you raised this issue, because unfortunately, this is what Richard Lynn writes about, and also some other sociobiologists, great people, Murphy as well, and Kevin MacDonald. I guess, I hate to say that, I'm a little bit hypocritical myself. I should have probably have more children myself. But the fact of the matter is that intelligent people with high IQ and with the good, not just IQ, mathematically speaking, with high moral integrity, for some reasons always find an alibi not to have more children. And I deeply appreciate and respect people who have more children of European ancestry.
I read an article very recently in The Guardian in London. And it was actually about a Jewish individual who's got a new book about how 20 reasons or 50 reasons why you shouldn't have children, and all the reasons why children are too much trouble and too much pain and how painful it is for the mother. And this was by a Jewish woman who already had children.
Mm. You know? Well, they're very strict about their genealogy. They're very strict about genetic markers. I mean, you can't get neither can I get an Israeli citizenship overnight. You understand what I mean? So we are talking here about double standards, you know.
I saw a special the other day on television, and they had about an Israeli kibbutz and everything, and some of the settlements and the stolen land.
Absolutely.
And the average family there was 6 or 7 or 8 children.
Yes, yes. Well, that's the way to survive. Well, if we can just, you know, follow the same line, look, for instance, what's going on in Kosovo with Serbs, for that matter, you know. I feel sorry for them, because it's not the matter of claiming some quote-unquote historical rights. Well, right. For that matter, we can move over to your Louisiana or New Mexico, where I also lived for some time. After all, I'm a U.S. citizen, and I very much appreciate the United States of America. But once, look, 10 years down the road, how can you claim your historical rights to Louisiana, or for that matter, New Mexico? Mm-hmm. Because 10 years down the road, about two-thirds, probably even all of it, or 90% of the population might be of non-European origin. So what do you want to do?
Well, obviously, there's going to be a big change, and it's not going to be a change for the better for Europeans, that's for sure.
Here we go. Exactly the same thing is happening in France. You know, people often ask me, Tom, you have so many friends in France, you speak good French, you speak good well German, why don't you go and stay in Frankfurt for a while, or why don't you live in L.A.? I say, thank you very much. I mean, sometimes I feel more like in New York, in L.A., I feel more like me living in Kinshasa than in a European city. So,
yeah. For members of our audience, I want to let you know as well, just to know you a little bit more about Tom Sunik. He is fluent, of course, in his native Croatian. He's fluent in English. He's fluent in German. And he's fluent in French. And he can read Latin, I think. He also can read a couple other languages. And he's one of those many intellects on our side that does not get the media prominence that he deserves simply because of the fact he has politically incorrect opinions. And we're very honored to give him a voice here for our many listeners at davidduke.com. And we're really pleased that he could spend this very valuable time, his very valuable time, with us all. But I want you to know that a typical broadcast, we have many tens of thousands of people will be listening to your words and are listening to your words all over the world. And we're really thankful.
Well, thank you, Dr. Duke. Thank you. I must admit, with all due honesty, thank you for your kind comments. But to some extent, it applies, what you've just said for me applies to you and to many, many brave intellectuals we know of, both of us, intelligent, very well smart, very well educated, but for a variety of politically correct reasons, are being ostracized, or for that matter, being not being allowed to have access to the media.
DavidDuke.com will be handling his latest book, Homo Americanus, as soon as possible. We're going to be contacting the distributors shortly. But I urge people who are listening to this broadcast right now to go ahead and order this book from other sources. And let me get the name of the book for our listeners so they can be clear about it, Doctor. Name of your book?
The name of the book, Homo Americanus, Child of the Postmodern Age. It can be obtained, it can be ordered through Amazon.com.
Amazon.com, that's pretty
easy. Or it can be just
easy.
Type my name on the Google and type the name of the book and you can find it right away.
So we really urge our listeners to get a copy of this book as soon as possible and read it. I think it's of great value, and there's been many wonderful reviews of it. I've only read sections. I'm looking forward to reading the entire book, and I'm very anxiously awaiting my copy, and I'm supposed to get it. If I was back in Louisiana right now, I'd have my copy in my hands, but I have to wait a little
while. I'll give it to you. Well, thank you. That's very kind of you.
But, okay, Doctor, let's talk a little bit more about the socio-biologic aspects of this whole struggle. You know, I think, and I read one of your articles 3 years ago, and you said something to the effect that, and you started this section of the interview out with the fact that we don't understand the fact that we're propagandized today. And you said at one point, I remember if I read one of your articles, that in the old days of communism in Eastern Europe, you knew that the newspapers were biased.
Right.
You knew that they were controlled by the enemy, and you knew, so you didn't trust anything they wrote.
Exactly.
But today we have a different situation.
Absolutely. Well, this was the point I made. I'm sorry if I made it too academically somewhat earlier. Well, that's precisely the quote-unquote advantage of communism. It was so crude. It was so barbaric. And just think about the East European press during the communist time in the former DDR, in Eastern Germany, or Pravda for that matter, or even the communist press in the so-called Free West. If you look at the sentence structure, if you look at this la langue de bois, as the French call it, the German call it Betonsprache, and we should probably say the double talk. I had a lecture recently on it. Those lexical, those semantic distortions of the words, they were so crude. So even a child, a boy of 12 years, could crack jokes about the communist lingo because it was just stupid. It was just plain stupid. So even though
kind of everybody knew it.
Yes, even the architects of that language, even the language, if you wish, even the masters of the discourse, even the communist apparatchiks. They knew that this was
like tongue in cheek.
Precisely. Even Ozhdanov, for instance, yeah. Or Beria, they knew that this was just a make believe. Now, here we come. Here we have the big problem with the New York Times, with the Washington Post, and with the so called free media.
Free media.
They are extremely well. Well, first and foremost, they have a bankroll in intellectuals. They have people who are well paid and who will do everything to get well paid. I don't want to mention some of the names. I know some of the people firsthand. They tap me on the shoulder, they say, Tom, how good you are, but listen, I'm well paid, I just don't want to rock the boat in the Washington Times or Washington Post. I don't want to mention the names, I'm sure you know those people, some of them at least.
Even the politically unwashed like me,
many
people in media said, I really like you.
Privately, they hug me, they offer me a beer and everything, but they would never come out in open and say, Tom, I'll back you up. And this is what I fear most, because we have lost the sense of honor. We have lost the sense of civic responsibility. And once again, if I can just come backtrack a little bit, Dr. Duke, as far as America is concerned, keep in mind that many Europeans still do not know about the Southern heritage at Antebellum South. And this is something that I sorely miss. And that's what I'm also explaining. I have just for my Southern friends from Tennessee, from my folks from Radio Cesspool or for whatever, wherever they are, there is a nice chapter I wrote about the Southern Comfort, about the Antebellum South, where I'm quoting some big authors, including George Fitzhugh, who had a marvelous mastership of the English language, and I feel a deep sorrow for what happened, because what happened in 1866 in Tennessee and in the South happened exactly 100 years later in Europe.
Exactly right.
With brainwashing, with reconstruction and all the rest. I know, unfortunately, many details. It makes me, what Nietzsche said, I'm sorry to say that, what makes me unhappy, what makes me crazy is the knowledge. And probably there is something in that ignorance is bliss.
Good. Here's a longer question, too. You know, I know that you met recently in Australia with a number of people, including Mr. Tobin and others who are dissident on certain historical questions in Europe. And this is for some of our new readers as well, and listeners as well, to davidduke.com, that it's an amazing scenario when we are told that we have a free press and we have a free society and we have free speech, and yet in many nations of Europe, and the fact is right at this moment, we have thousands of men and women who sit in prison for simply expressing different opinions about aspects of the Second World War and about the Holocaust.
I can tell you the exact figure. Over the last 10 years, over 10,000 people were sentenced to either minor fine or prison sentences in Western Germany.
Simply for expressing an opinion, political opinion, or historical opinion.
Infringing the constitutional paragraph 130, or what they call it, Volksverhetzung, or the poor translation of it is the incitement of the masses. It's a very curious
language. Sounds like a communist
term. Aurelian language, exactly. That was my lecture in Australia recently on it. And this is precisely what we have to fear most. And I'm talking to you, not as a politician, but as an academic. I'm very much surprised and stunned with this sleaziness, if I can put it that way, with the fear. Oh, I don't know what's going on. There are so many good academics all over Europe and all over the United States who should at least have the fortitude of saying those things, of pointing out that as free intellectuals they should actually fight against this self-censorship. Yeah. And this is the worst type of censorship.
Yeah, I went to the Holocaust conference in Tehran and spoke there about the freedom of speech issues, not per se about the Holocaust. And they interviewed me about it, and they said, well, this is a terribly disgusting and inhuman conference that they're having. And I said, well, this conference has allowed both sides to be expressed. And how can this be disgusting when you've got hundreds of people in Europe in prison right now for having opinion, being in prison for their opinion? Nobody's being in prison in Iran for their opinion on the Holocaust, whether for or against. Where's the freedom?
I'm glad that you pointed this out, Dr. Duke. I like the speech. I'm not trying to flatter you, but the fact is you actually specified this freedom of speech issue. I'm not going to debate about the victimology of the Holocaust. This is an entirely different matter. Yeah. But if a society, if a Western society claims to be free, if the Constitution allows me to express my views, however aberrant they may sound right. in someone's ears, as long as I don't advocate violence, I should be allowed to say that. And I have to congratulate you indeed and extend the gratitude for what you did. And I think in a free society, I may disagree with you, I certainly disagree with you on many, many issues. Or I may disagree with Frederick Durbin for that matter. But I respect the fact that the man is allowed to say something. And it's an irony of history that a Muslim country, which we actually demonize as a negative or whatever, right. for the lack of free speech, is allowing this conference. I would love to have this conference being staged here. And then we can debate those issues. Sure. We can discard certain lunatics here who are actually minimizing or, for that matter, talking negatively about the Jewish Holocaust, for that matter. Right. But the question always comes to my mind, why is this not allowed in the West? And we know the
answer. Well, that's suspicious in its own sense. Yes. Why would these people say no freedom of speech? Now, we only got about 10 more minutes left, and so I wanted to ask you another point. This brings up some of your experiences in America, and it's really coming to the rest of the Western world as well. This doublespeak you continue to talk about is true not only in terms of freedom of speech, for instance, the Holocaust and other issues, it's also in terms of our race relations. Mm-hmm. Now, in America, and I think you've even faced some of this and seen it firsthand in academia in America, we have something called affirmative action. It's not called racial discrimination, yet it is actual racial discrimination against people of European descent who are, in fact, better qualified. Because, you see, if the minority is better qualified, then they're protected by law already, by the Civil Rights Act. Affirmative action is only necessary to put less qualified minorities over better qualified whites. And then this is enforced under a rule called Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, equal employment.
I can hear you.
And yet it's absolutely the opposite of equal employment. So what's your experiences in that field?
Let me first clarify some lexical issues. I'm obsessed with semantics, and I like foreign languages. After all, this
me
is my
too.
Field. First and foremost, let's just look at the word multiculturalism. This is not just a misnomer. This is a lie. There is no such thing as multiculturalism. For that matter, I am a multicultural person because I was raised and bred in different and I grew up in different cultures in France and in Germany and also in the United States of America. We actually use this stupid euphemism of political correctness, which we call multiculturalism, because we don't want to use the right word, which is multiracialism. For some reasons, over the last 20, 30 years, we've been avoiding the word race. What's wrong with the race? After all, a race is not just a skin deep. It's more than that. You know, we have empirical mm-hmm. evidence for it. So first and foremost, Dr. Duke, we have to start with words, with concepts. We have to know what we are talking about. The modern liberal media is constantly shoving this down our throat, this concept of multiculturalism. I have absolutely nothing against multiculturalism, but let's call the American society as it is. It's a multiracial society. The European Union is a multiracial society. It's not a multicultural society at all. The second issue I would like to clarify as well, and I'm sorry, what could you bring this up again?
Affirmative action and discrimination against
the Europeans. Yes, affirmative action is another misnomer. It's just a euphemism for discriminating against the whites. And I don't want to sound too personal and too private and with my drama. But to be perfectly honest with you, I was overqualified. I still consider myself a highly competent teacher, professor. I don't have any agendas. I'm not particularly... I'm open to discussions. I don't consider myself on the left, on the right. I consider myself, philosophically speaking, and watch my words, as an agnostic, only philosophically speaking,
right.
not religiously. But I'm open to different words, and I'm open to different criticism. But for a variety of reasons, I was passed over for a promotion. Some women, or for some men, what we call minorities, whatever minorities mean in a society where they represent majorities almost. And of course I'm frustrated about that. I think I could provide very much to a local community, be it in Tennessee, and I don't mind relocating tomorrow, for that matter, in Utah, anywhere else. But we have those stupid federal laws, which, by the way, remind me very, very much, keep what I'm saying, keep in mind, very mind of the laws in the ex-Soviet Union, ex-communist Yugoslavia, where we also had the affirmative action, although it was differently coded, it was differently worded. It was named a quota system. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, in ex-communist artificial Yugoslavia, so many, many Albanians had to were allowed to accede to the federal police.
So this
was really
first a communist program before it ever came to the West.
Absolutely. Like in the Soviet Union, you had so many Georgians, so many Ukrainians, so many people of different from different ethnic groups and all the rest. So as a result, the system broke up. It just couldn't last. You cannot force multiculturalism, let's call it multiracialism, unless there is a consensus for it. Once you force it upon the people, as America is now doing, the system is bound to collapse. And this is what I fear that this is going to happen. You saw firsthand what happened in New Orleans with Katrina, which became a symbol all over Europe. I saw it firsthand in L.A. in 92. I was in 92 when Sarajevo was bombarded. So was
yeah,
LA.
The lights went out. The veneer of civilization went away. It was Africa.
Exactly. I knew it firsthand. And then also in Cincinnati, I know firsthand when black cops, you know, were fighting against white cops. So this is what I call the balkanization of the West. This is what I fear most. But listen, we don't want to learn from the history. Here we had, just 10 years ago, we had this local little infighting, which in comparison to what might happen in the States, maybe nothing, maybe like a kindergarten.
We only have a very short period of time left. I'm probably going to have to make this program into three, but we're just going to divide the first day because we've gone so long here, but we've got so much good material for our listeners. I want to get your impression just for a couple minutes. I know one of your good friends, and one of my good friends is Dr. Kevin MacDonald. Mm-hmm. And I want to get your impressions of the impact of his work and how you think his work has impacted your work. And because I consider him to be one of the greatest intellectuals for European mankind in the world today, and for the truth and understanding of how race impacts society, including not only race, but even ethnic groups within races.
Yes.
So could you...
I certainly have a very high opinion of him, but this is probably just a standard qualifier. I respect him for a variety of reasons. First and foremost, he's an extremely modest man. Extremely modest man. Yeah. He's not, you know, intellectuals. I know academia very well. Academics like to play this game of publish and perish, little jealousy and all this stuff, and it's all over. It's like a disease. He's a modest man, very modern at the same time, very traditional at the same time. And plus, his work has a path-breaking value because it has opened up new venues for the research of not just Judaism and the Jewish questions, but of deeper sociobiological issues. I myself, I have to tell you, I'm not so much a man of one expertise. I was brought, to some extent, I take certain pride in the fact that I'm a man of the Renaissance, so I like expanding my horizons. I'm just as fond of reading Ezra Pound and his poems, which I sometimes have difficulties in deciphering, as I'm fond of reading my favorite German philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer, who's the philosopher of pessimism. So I certainly admire Kevin MacDonald for his work, because I think that he's, I don't want to flatter him too much, but I think that he's really set the stones for the major, major horizons now, and for us to follow up on that.
Can I ask you the question of specifically, what area of his work most impacted you, or what concept do you think he introduced you to the most, or emphasized to you the most in terms of your work? Is there any reflection in your own work?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what did you feel like you got the most benefit from when you understood and read his works?
In relationship to my book?
Yes.
Well, actually, let me put it quite bluntly, quite openly. Homo Americanus is basically also Homo Judaicus, in a sense. So basically, this American new species...
Would you say that again?
Homo Americanus is basically Homo Judaicus, in a sense.
Ah,
so in a sense that this Americanized man, the Homo Americanus, well, you can use a metaphor from the East Coast or West Coast, to a large extent is now being defined. Americanism is being... Okay, let me just put it academically. Americanism is now being defined by prominent figures from the New York Times, from the Forward magazine, and all
Hollywood,
this.
Hollywood, New York Times,
exactly.
Media,
and
Fox
not
TV.
From people from the South, from the General Leo, for that matter. You know, I don't want to name all of them. So that's what I'm basically. This is the symbolics of the book. Again, I would like to encourage your listeners, and I certainly would be pleased. Probably they don't have to read me, but at least they should read the bibliography and the translations that I did.
Okay, and I guess a last question. And I always try to have a positive aspect of these broadcasts, because I do believe European mankind will one day not only survive and regain our freedom, but we'll go on to the stars. But what do you think is the most important thing that our listeners can do to win power for the truth and to save our heritage and to reestablish our existence on the both European soil and European American soil? What's the best thing or best advice you would give our listeners on that score?
Well, David, real briefly, if I may. First and foremost, I think people like you and similar folks should do much more. And I'm very glad that you serve as a role model for many, many, many Americans. That's first and foremost step. The second step is we should not have big, big, big ideas without being able to materialize them and to implement them in reality. So I think we have to work more at the grassroots level and not speculate and then tinker with some big ideas of how to change the world. Third point, cultural hegemony is very important. I'm glad with your program and with your books that you have already made some paths. That's very commendable. And the third is, look, we are still in a majority in a sense. We just need what we say, civic courage. Let's learn from our enemies. Do you know how many Bolsheviks took power? We are talking about hundreds of people who were extremely well disciplined and who had the idea. We're not talking about millions of people.
Yes.
And that's what I actually, this is what I find something strange and inexplicable, and I don't want to end up on the pessimistic tone. But Europeans have this force, they have this intelligence, and yet I've never seen so much this petty little bickering and this little individualism. Just, it's unexplainable to me. And I guess we should. In fact, the time has come just to stick together and do something.
Yeah, one of the first things you told me when we met is that you appreciated the fact, because you've had so much experience with the so-called right-wing movement in Europe and America of the infighting. And you said you appreciate the fact that I've stayed above the fray.
That's what I truly, you know, without false flattering, just stay above the fray. I mean, I sometimes hate to mention the names, but this is something which is really a hurdle. You know, we just got to forget about those little things and see what our priorities
it's
are.
It's unbelievable.
And our priorities is our survival.
Exactly.
That's all.
We need to spend our time talking about our real enemies and the real dangers we have, and the movement's full of this. Everybody else is an agent. Everybody else is evil. Everybody
this
else is corrupt.
This type of a snitch type of a talk just leads us nowhere. I repeat, our basic goal should be our survival, because otherwise we shall perish. We shall disappear as a race.
Yeah, well, the left had a long time a slogan, no enemies on the left, and we kind of need kind of the same slogan, no enemies on the right, as long as that's one thing the New Orleans Protocol talked about at my conference. I don't know if you ever read the New Orleans Protocol about that, how we believe movement should conduct, and no criticism over the movement leaders, and so forth. And by the way, we definitely want to invite you to our next European conference of European Mankind. We're probably going to have one next spring. I know a lot of our listeners have been waiting for that announcement. We haven't got a specific date yet, but we would love for you to be one of our main speakers, to come over and address our people. We've had very big audiences before and very influential people from all over the world, and we would really love to have you take part in it next time.
I'd be pleased, Dr. Duke.
We would be honored by that. And also, I want to make the pages of davidduke.com open to you. We have many, many, many thousands of visits, individual visits, every day from all over the world. And we want to open our pages. In fact, I want to give you a posting privilege to post your material on our website. And I hope that you will take advantage of that. I hope you've enjoyed our website and got a lot of good material from it as well. And I want to just extend that invitation to you to absolutely use our website to reach people with your fantastic work and ideas.
Thanks, I'm much obliged.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Sunik, for being with us, and we really appreciate you. Thank you so much. I'm honored
to
finally meet you in
person.
All
the best to my Southerners.
Yeah, well, I am a Southerner. When you talked about the South, and yes, when I was a very young man in grade school and in secondary school, we learned about Robert E. Lee. In fact, we had in Louisiana, we had a holiday for Robert E. Lee's birthday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, now it's replaced by Martin Luther King's
birthday. Well, no, this tells you everything. Yeah, sums up everything.
It does. But we grew up understanding that. And I see young people today in my state, and they don't even understand what the history of the South was. It was a great history of honored people who stood up for their heritage, for their ideals.
Absolutely. We should not castrate our memory. We should retrieve our memory. Yeah. We are not talking about 100 years. We are talking about thousands of years. And we should be proud of what we are and not be ashamed. Guilt feelings, it's not my game. Right. Let's get rid of our guilt.
But all the struggles like North and South and of course, the Second World War and East and West of the Cold War, all of that we've got to put behind us now because
absolutely.
We're in a struggle for survival.
Screw out Southerners, Northerners, doesn't make. It's all survival.
Yeah, right, right. And I hope I hope people, you know, when I look at the Russian people who I grew up to be taught to hate, I now look at the Russian people, they're my brothers and sisters.
I'm glad to hear that.
And I know that, and I hope that the Russians and the Europeans now look at Americans the same way.
Absolutely.
We've got to make a distinction between who the American people are and the American government, because the American government, who's controlled by an alien power, is actually just as much against the American European as he is against the European in Europe or in Russia, for that matter. And we're all under the same problem, but we've got to be united and together for our freedom and for our heritage.
Thank you, Dr. Duke.
And thank you. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of the interview. We've actually gone so long. What I'm going to do is try to make this interview in three parts over 3 days. We will archive it as well. And we've had many, many programs, Dr. Sunik, who've been listened to now by 500,000 people. And so I hope that this results in a lot of your books being sold and read. And again, I urge every listener to get a copy of the new book, Homo Americanus, by the Dr. Tom Sunik, who's been a teacher, a professor in the United States. I'm interviewing him here in his native Croatia. And it's been one of the most interesting interviews I think I've ever conducted in my life. And I look forward to your commentary on this program and your comments for Dr. Sunik. I suggest also that you might want to write Dr. Sunik with your own emails about this program. Could you give us an email address they could use?
By all means, and I certainly would encourage your friends, your colleagues, and even your listeners of honor, of integrity, to write to me. And if I can be of any assistance whatsoever, I'll be pleased to help. And rest assured, I'm not interested into money, into career. I'd like to help my people. I'd like to help my people wherever they may live, either in New Orleans or in Zagreb, anywhere else. I'm good in teaching. I'm good in homeschooling as well. And I'm good in I'm very fluent in the French language. I write the French in French and in German. And I'd be pleased to be of some assistance.
You're probably going to hear from some of our French and German listeners.
By all
too.
Means, they should come and contact me. And please feel free to give them my website and also my email.
One last comment, listeners. I want you to understand that so many of the intellectuals and professors, the leaders, really, of our cause around the world, they've endured certain persecutions, they've endured certain difficulties in their lives and their academic careers because of their work. And Tom Sunik is one of those individuals, and he deserves our support. And even though he said no, but I mean, if you can find a way to support him, the main way you can support him, I think, is by supporting his books. But drop him an email again. Let him give you the email address and let him know that you appreciate his work, because that's the fuel that helps our people work. People need recognition. And Tom Sunik deserves the recognition from all of our people across the globe. What's your email address again?
Well, it's a little bit difficult, but let me give you a shorter one.
Or a website they can go to if you have a website.
Well, actually, can I write it to you and can you put it on the...
Yes, we can do that.
I guess it might be much better because it's a little bit longer. I have a private address which is a little bit complicated. And if you don't mind, I'd like to write it down on a piece of paper.
And you're welcome to send me an email at davidduke.com. Our current one, we change them occasionally, so hit your email button on your own computer because we change them because of spam and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But currently it is info45@davidduke.com. But you can just go to my website, davidduke.com, and send an email. And I'll be happy
that.
To forward it
to Dr.
Yes. Sunik.
Well, tomislav.sunik and then @hnnethr, but it's a little bit complicated. So I'd rather
I'm never going to get that one.
So it's my private one. So
but
I'd rather,
do you have a website yet of your own?
Yes, I do have a. It's drsunik.netfirms.com.
Drsunik.net?
I'm sorry, drsunik.netfirms.com.
Netfirms.com.
Correctly.
All right, well, you can send it there. Do you have an email address there?
Yes, it's also there, Dr. Sunik,
Well, they can just do the. They can go to your website.
Oh, they'll find me everywhere. No, sure.
Well,
and it has my email address on it as well. But one way or another, David, if you don't mind, I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to so you can put it on your website, certainly.
Well, that's
and folks, anybody, I don't care about their social status, as long as they have the integrity and as long as they fight for the European cause.
That's great. And again, I appreciate your very kind comments about me and your travels around the world.
Well,
I know you
pleasure.
Said some
I've heard
nice
of you
things.
A great deal even before I, even when I was a prof back in the States, I saw you on TV with this guy with this, we had all freckles on his face and just sort of a face like
Michael Kinsley.
Oh, I think it was Michael. It was a very remarkably ugly guy, you know.
Yeah.
So, physically speaking.
Yeah.
So I just.
I know you've even written to a few people. I've got comments around Europe and around America of your comments about my Wolf Blitzer appearance that you
yes,
enjoyed.
Yes, well, I was pleased that you did not subvert your audience. I was pleased with the choice of your lingo. And, of course, I would be very pleased if you could express the same thing to your listeners, to your viewers, to avoid harsh languages, to avoid this Halloween Nazi costumery and all this
Absolutely.
Stuff, because it just takes us nowhere.
Well, I do this on almost every broadcast that I'm
Please
on.
Please do that.
We have to express ourselves in a decent way.
In a decent manner, in a traditional fashion, in a good-looking fashion, if I can put it that way, because this is what captivates the audience.
Well, I tell you, that's the only way we're going to win this battle, and because people want to believe they're morally right. And what I say to people, it's not an act. What we believe in a good moral sense. We're not trying to say we want to eliminate other people, control other people.
No.
We simply want to preserve our own heritage.
Absolutely.
And the one issue we didn't get on, unfortunately, in this broadcast, but I'll do one by telephone with you at some point. I want to get all your impressions on the neocon influence of American
yes.
Mideast policy.
I'm also talking about this quite extensively in my book about Walt Mearsheimer and all the rest. It's quite an issue, and I'm sorry we're running out of time, but I certainly would be very pleased to talk about this. Because in my first book, Against Democracy and Equality, I'm talking about the neocons and the genesis of neocons.
Well, we'll definitely do another interview like that.
Buchanan, Reagan, actually, who brought them into the cabinet. It's a long story. It's a good topic indeed.
It's a great topic, and I know that you have a lot to say about it. And again, I'm very pleased to see a Croatian who's also a fellow American.
Yes.
And I'm very proud of the fact that...
Hey, David, look, it's my country of choice. I wasn't born there by accident. I chose America, but
That's
not
right.
the one as it looks now. This America is not my America.
And give my best to Kevin next time you talk to him.
I certainly will. Thank you, Dr. Duke. I appreciate that.
Thank you, sir. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is it. That is the final word for this broadcast. Remember that this organization and this website and the David Duke Report relies on your support and your work to spread the word not only throughout your community but throughout the Internet, through the world. The Internet is a pathway to the entire world. You can reach literally thousands of people, yourself, if you just start reaching people on the Internet every day. You can go to chat rooms. You can send emails. They have email addresses for companies, businesses, individuals. There's nothing illegal or wrong about sending them a personal note and saying, read Dr. Sunik's book or go visit davidduke.com. And your support makes what we're doing possible. Also, we have been trying and ardently to get the funding necessary for reprinting My Awakening. I have a new edition ready, which has a lot of work and updating. In fact, I've talked to Kevin McDonald about this. I've also talked to my good friend, the professor of racial studies in Canada, J. Philip Rushton, who's also given me some advice and some thoughts about the latest scientific evidence. And this edition is ready to go, but we've not been able to raise the funds yet. It's a 700-page book, and it just costs a lot of money to reprint them. I've given this book to so many thousands of people in government and in academia across the country, across the world. And we've also had this book reach in many different nations of the world, but we've got to raise the money to reprint the next edition. Your help on that is crucial right now. And as soon as we raise the money, it'll come off the presses about 6 weeks, but we still have a long way to go on that endeavor. So I look forward to your letters and your cards. I look forward to your work and your efforts for our heritage. Thanks so much, and I'll see you again in a few days.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast.